There seems to be a shift in the last week or so, a change in the air. Maybe you felt it, I certainly have. It feels like March 2021 when we visibly witnessed protests in the UK against government tyranny leap from tens of thousands to hundreds of thousands. It was quite a sight to behold. People are asking questions now when they really weren't before. The public's trust in the media, and therefore the public's trust in the authorities the media really represents, is at an all-time low. In the US, just 11% of the population say they trust the media is telling them the truth. That's as low as I can recall, certainly in my lifetime. This distrust has meant people are seeking answers elsewhere. They're listening to more marginalized voices. Now, this terrifies the establishment, of course, and the Department of Homeland Security's new disinformation policing is testament to that. They're rattled. But they can try and censor the truth all they like. They can attempt to invert it by labeling it fake news. They can paint over it, ban it from entering countries, but they can never truly delete it because people know the truth when they hear it, and perhaps more importantly, they know when they're being lied to. A lie smells like a wet dog, it's a fart in an elevator. It doesn't matter how well you try and conceal it, someone's smelling it and they're looking at you. This desperation to keep the cat in the bag leads to mistakes. CNN accidentally showing a Ukrainian soldier doing a Nazi salute, the result of which is CNN being stripped of their media accreditation in the region. The poor concealment of the Ukrainian crypto donation money laundering scandal is another drop ball. We'll be talking to financial expert Mitch Feierstein about that later in the show. NBC revealing too much about the Paul Pelosi attack, or former Prime Minister Boris Johnson's father saying that they should stop people flying to achieve net zero. See, that's always been the goal, but they don't actually want the serfs to know that. Stanley Johnson just said the quiet bit out loud. The creepy unelected Bond villain, Klaus Schwab, is openly talking at the G20 this week about the transformation of the world as we know it. This lad just loves telling us what the gig is. And they're doing that a lot lately, but with every arrogant confession, every accidental admission, and every bit of news footage they've forgotten to edit, another percentage of the population wakes to the scam, and at least the public faces of the people that are scamming them. And as Alani said in this week's In the News show, in the end, it won't be I'm a Celebrity, Bush Tucker trials these guys are facing. Welcome to Right Now. Last month, a friend of mine shared a tweet with me. The tweet was from a professional rugby club physiotherapist called Adam Rowland. Adam was calling on journalists to help spread the word about his vaccine injury. Now, he tagged plenty of big names and got nothing in response. Not that I'm surprised, but that's the whole point of what we're trying to do here. So we're very happy to welcome Adam. Adam, let's start at the beginning. What happened to you immediately after you took the vaccine?
Yeah, so immediately after the vaccine, Gareth, you know, I developed a flu-like episode, if you like. I was in bed for 4 or 5 days, shivering, sweating, you know, what you'd expect from a virus, really.
So what are things like for you now? So after that initial kind of fever, few days, how's it gone then from between then and now?
Yeah, so basically, as every week went by, you know, I developed more and more symptoms. It's quite unbelievable the amount of symptoms I developed. So after the fever, the next thing that I developed was insomnia with fits in my bed. I couldn't lie flat in bed, which I still can't now. So I'd have fits 15 times a night. I developed palpitations and arrhythmias in my heart. I then went on to develop double vision, face rashes, yellow eyeballs. And this continued, Gareth, over about a 6 month period. I went back into my GP with telephone calls to report it. And at this moment in time, Gareth, after after the vaccination, the GPs weren't doing face to face appointments, so they just kept telling me it was anxiety and panic attacks. I actually needed to take a month off work while they gave me sleeping medication and offered me antidepressant medication, which I knew it wasn't, but I listened to my GP. And then from there, Gareth, it just progressed at a horrendous rate. GP started sending me to neurologists as I developed neurological problems, like my fingers were all flexed, I've got neuropathy in my hands, I've got neuropathy in my legs, all my muscles are wasting away. So it sends me to a neurologist who, again, you know, I was just baffled as the cause of it. And by this stage, I said to him, do you think this could be the COVID vaccination? You know, I'd been suffering, over 6 months with it by then. And the guy was a well thought of professor, and he just turned around to me and went, yeah, it could well be. But he just sort of laughed at me and said, you know, there's nothing we can sort of kind of do. And then as time went on, got into this year, into 2022, I became breathless. I started to get constant chest pain in my chest. I'd already been on ACU in my heart. My heart was going on into VT at this point. But they couldn't find the cause. They just kept telling me it was bamboozled. They didn't know what was going on. And then, yeah, I get into this part of the year, and I eventually end up collapsing in May this year. And then was taken into hospital, and I had 3 large PEs in my lungs. I've got hundreds of tiny blood clots in my lungs. And they tell me a third of my lungs have died. And, you know, I've got perimyocarditis in my heart. And now I've just been recently diagnosed with myopathy, you know, which is a terminal illness, if you like. So, yeah, things aren't great for me, Gareth.
And this was as a result of the AstraZeneca jab, is that right?
Yes, it was. Yeah, indeed, yeah.
So, obviously, I saw that tweet you put out where you were tagging lots of people within the media. From what I could see, you know, there wasn't any response coming back. Have you had any response from the media or from you know, the NHS in general about this?
So in terms of mainstream media, Gareth, I've got a spreadsheet. I've contacted something like 150 different journalists on repeated occasions. I've had some replies. I've had replies from, I think it's 4 people out of the 155. One keep promising me a story, and then they pass it to somebody else. He passes it to someone else. I keep sending follow-up emails saying what's going on. And then they just say, oh, we're speaking to our lawyers. I'm speaking to an independent journalist who's, you know, 30 plus years in the business, who's worked, you know, for multiple, you know, mainstream media, tabloids, etc. She's just told me that there's, she's had many articles already lined up with the Daily Mail and etc. She's had 6 articles lined up. They've been okayed by the editors. And at the last minute, the legal team from these newspapers are pulling them, the lawyers. I've asked her for the details of why they're being pulled so people like my story can get out. And she's saying, well, the government have got a stipulation that anything that could be deemed as causing panic in the population cannot be published. But obviously, you know, I don't fully buy that because it's such a loose thing of anything that could be causing panic. So, yeah, it's really disappointing. I've got other messages on my phone and emails. I get the odd one and they just say we're not allowed to report on it or it's too sensitive to report on. That's as far as you get.
That's extraordinary to me, Adam, because it's very real. I mean, I'm looking at you, obviously you've got oxygen in your nose. This is a very real situation. The fact that they don't feel like they can talk about it is outrageous, because what it's doing is you know, someone might be looking at your situation who then, you know, might not go ahead and have their booster as a result. And so, you know, by telling your story, you can save people's lives, and they're not allowing you to do that, which is disgraceful. I mean, have you had contact from other people that are in the same situation as you? Now, people that have, because you've gone public, obviously, Adam, like people that have reached out to you and go, mate, I'm in the same situation.
Literally, Gareth, there's, you know, I know there's thousands and thousands of us. And the thing with me is, I worked in the medical profession. I was head of medical in professional sport. You know, I've worked 20 years in professional sport with cardiologists, GPs, respiratory consultants. And it's taken me up until when I collapsed to get officially written on my NHS records that this has all been caused by the vaccine. Now, the problem being is I was super fit, Gareth, and I hadn't been to my GP for years and years. I didn't have any pre-existing, you know, illnesses. So, you know, it's quite easy for medical professionals now in hindsight to, because of the amount of diseases I've got and problems, that, you know, it's unequivocal, it's vaccine. What really concerns me is, though, I got gaslit. I got told by even people that I'd worked with that it was all in my head and it was anxiety. And they don't believe it. They don't believe in these vaccination injuries because of the mainstream media and the MHRA are basically sweeping it all under the carpet. But the official figures on the ONS government website, you know, clearly reveal as an alarming problem. So that was my issue for speaking out, because there's a lot of people with, say, pre-existing things like diabetes, or maybe had a pre-existing heart complaint, maybe on high blood pressure medication. And these people are getting told that they're worsening illnesses and the reason why family members are dying because of these other morbidities. And actually, it's the vaccination. And this is what's really concerning me, is that it's been swept under the carpet because it's much, much larger than, you know, the government are prepared to look into and admit. And my biggest thing is, you know, I'm unfortunately, you know, I'm not going to get better. So for me, I feel that my life has been spared to this point. I've been in hospital. I've had the defib out and the crash trolley next to my bed. And, you know, I thought, you know, that was my last breath. You know, I thought, you know, I'm dying. You know, so I'm speaking out because this madness has got to stop. I'm getting messages every single day off people, and they're going to hospital with blood clots. They're not getting picked up, and they're not getting investigated with the right tests, because the doctors' traditional tests aren't showing up a lot of the things that the vaccination and COVID are doing. So there's a lot of research going on at the minute with Doug Kell in Liverpool, Caroline Dalton in Sheffield, and also UCL in London. And there's a thing called microclotting, which is common between long COVID and vaccination injury when they've studied both groups. And what this does is, if it's left untreated, it accumulates in massive clots like myself, and ultimately people dying. But because the government won't recognise the vaccine injured, I've been told off an eminent consultant at a leading hospital I paid privately to see, he's allowed to give these medications that will stop people dying to people with long COVID, but his hospital managers and clinical managers at a leading hospital in London won't allow him to do it for vaccine injuries, even though he knows that they've got these little microclots going on in the body. So people are walking around as ticking time bombs, Gareth, and it's absolutely breaking my heart. I'm getting messages every day. I know what tests they need to diagnose them, but, you know, government bureaucracy, because we won't be acknowledged, there's people going to continue dying every day, Gareth.
There's no words to describe it, Adam. Thank you so much for talking to us, mate. And I'm sorry for what you're going through, mate. The fact you've got the courage to speak out and be so almost positive about the fact that you're going to make a difference and wake people up and help people, that's something else, mate. We appreciate that.
No, it's the least I can do to turn a negative into a positive situation. It's all I can do, buddy. Thank you.